going, Henry?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, no, I'm good. I've just been folding up some shorts and putting them away, so I'm feeling pretty...
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone's got their shit together.
Yeah.
How many pairs of shorts do you own?
I guess, just grabbing a number out of the air, I'm going to say 6. But I think it could easily be up to 9.
Wow.
I mean, 6 I can picture right now.
I think I own two pairs of shorts that don't have sort of offensive holes in revealing places.
Really?
That require carefully chosen undergarments. I think that's it at the moment.
Do you have the kind of undergarments where they also have offensive holes?
Yes.
And it could be if you interface the two wrong ones together, you could have a hole all the way through.
Exactly. What I'm aiming for, I'm constantly aiming for a kind of a below the waist eclipse is what I'm after. A total eclipse.
When the stars align.
But that's quite hard to maintain 24 hours a day, every day.
Oh.
As you know, eclipses tend to come and go.
It feels like something that would happen in the closing stages of an action film or a sci-fi, wouldn't it? That we've got one chance, guys. we've got one chance
to see what's next knob.
To see what was next knob, and we're pretty sure that's got the data codes on
it. Or at least a bit of
that we need.
Yeah.
Well, certainly, we'll know more anyway. Going into future challenges, you can't know too much at this point. Just, guys, don't question it. Just go for it. We've got one chance. Go, go, go.
In recent weeks, I've noticed a new hole appearing in all of my underwear.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I bought all my underwear at the same time. Mm. I'll tend to do this every sort of 2 years or so. I'll just buy a lot of underwear. I think I bought something like 20 pantses from H&M.
It's a real joyless bulk purchase, isn't it? You're seeing yourself as a sort of like a large hotel or something. You've got things come in, things go out, stock things get restocked.
People nick stuff.
Yeah.
They've all reached the point of failure at exactly the same time.
Mm.
Because they're exactly the same age. And they've all developed exactly the same 20p sized hole that sits exactly below the perineum.
Okay.
And I don't know what that says about my physiology.
It suggests you're growing some sort of perineal horn, I would say. or some sort of a serrated fin at the very least.
It doesn't sound like anything too much to worry about then. Just as you were.
If anyone's listening, and I know Mike used to be a doctor, but if anyone's got more up-to-date medical knowledge and knows about, you know, what to do about a perineal horn, please do get in touch.
I think as long as you're not getting through leather or denim, you're probably okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I get those denim pants on the NHS, or will I have to buy my own?
You should be able to, yeah. It's very postcode dependent, of course. If you're getting through car seats, then absolutely. Yeah, then that's, that should be no issue at all. Reupholstery is an absolute indication for medicalised chainmail pants. Is my understanding.
God bless the NHS.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing Ben now with a sort of shark fin, a sort of great white shark fin type thing, growing between his legs.
Oh, yeah. Scaring children at the beach, bobbing about with his arse up and his special little fin showing.
Can I be clear that I haven't been showing it to children at the beach?
You can be clear about that.
Can be clear, yeah.
Whether or not we keep that element in the podcast, yeah. Might get snipped out.
I did go to the beach this weekend. I sent Mike a photograph of what I found on
terrific.
The beach.
Oh, yeah? Was that the dead dolphin?
I found a dead dolphin. Full-size, proper dolphin.
Bloody
and
hell.
The weird thing is, it's such a treat to see a dolphin. Yeah. Like, seeing a dolphin in Britain is such a treat that I still got a bit of that feeling, even though it was dead.
Oh, really?
But under such terrible circumstances.
You know that feeling when you see a dolphin, which is like an unparalleled kind of wonder at nature and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I got a little bit of that, but it was like a false, it was like a false positive on that one.
It'd be like meeting like one of your heroes, like when a famous celebrity is one of your heroes, but then being dead.
And then my girlfriend looked it up when we got home. If you do find a dead dolphin, you're meant to ring the Natural History Museum.
Really?
And tell them where it is. And then tell them how much decomposition has happened. And if it's not too badly decomposed, they will drive to it, pick it up.
And stick it in a cabinet and write a blurb and get kids processing past it the next day within 24 hours. That's what they aim to do.
I think it's to do a post-mortem to work out why it's done that.
The natural history, but, that's interesting. We saw a dead dolphin a couple of weeks ago in Cornwall on the beach. And there were a couple of local can-do types, a couple who were like, yeah, don't worry, we've tagged it, dragged it up the beach, and we've informed the RNLI, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's probably actually that could be why it's dead, because it seemed perfectly fine when we.
But then we tagged it.
We tagged its beak
and then dragged it up.
On instinct, we tag. You know, we will tag things.
When you meet a cetacean, you must tag and drag.
Tag and drag.
Yeah.
You know, we've done the tag and drag course, and we're happy to. You know, we'll talk you through it if you want.
They also corrected me because I think I said something like, "Oh, it's a shame the dolphin's dead. It's a porpoise." Pardon? It's a porpoise. Okay.
Mike, when you saw it, did you get any of the residual wonder of nature dolphin feeling? Or was
they didn't let me. I think I probably would have done. I understand what you're talking about there. But these two, the bag and dragon taggers, I think they
ruined it.
Squares that a bit.
What do they tag it with?
I don't know, really.
Did they write dead on a post-it and then slap it on the side of the dolphin?
Not a dolphin. This is a porpoise.
This is a porpoise. Yeah.
It's not a porpoise, it's a porpoise, just to be clear.
So the Natural History Museum, they're like, right, is it like this dolphin is dead, so it is actually now it's natural history.
It's under their remit.
It's under their remit, and they get in as soon as something becomes natural history. It's like, we're on it. We're on it, guys. That's why we're the leading natural history museum in the world.
And the sand beneath that carcass officially becomes a satellite of the museum, I think. Like an embassy.
That's true. Yeah. It cost £19 to stand on it. Was it free, actually? It's free. I think it's free.
Yeah, but they do leave a sort of little slot in the dolphin that you can post £5 in if you can spare it.
Yeah, this dolphin was in quite a sort of state of decomposition, so I could have quite easily...
It was a nasty picture he sent me, for sure.
I could have pushed a £20 note through its skin, probably.
Yeah. Oh, God. So do you think they died of natural causes and everything's fine? Like, or is it like a national tragedy and we should all be up at arms about it? Or is it just like, you know... Dolphins die, people die.
It didn't have a harpoon poking out of it or anything, did it? There was no garrotting wire.
It bore all the hallmarks of a of a bar fight.
Yes, is dolphin on dolphin violence?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you why it died.
No, because I suppose I'm thinking of those beached whale stories, but it's different, isn't it? It's just this is an animal that's dead. If a whale's beached, that's a national sort of issue, isn't it?
Have you seen that video of a whale exploding on a beach?
What?
It is absolutely fantastic.
Exploding of what?
So I think I'm right in saying I can't remember which one is true. Either, I think it's this, right? So a massive, massive, I think it's a sperm whale, one of the really big ones, is on a beach in I think Massachusetts, somewhere like that. And they need to deal with it because it's really big and they don't know what to do with it. So they just shove a load of dynamite in the middle of it. So sort of send it
when in
skyward.
Doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up because I might have got that totally wrong.
That wasn't presumably in the hope that it would launch it back into the sea, was it?
No, I think it just would turn it into very small pieces of whale, which are much easier to pick up.
Easier to bag and tag.
Did that happen because of its like internal gases?
Well, that's
bloating it.
She's going to blow!
Because that's what happened to Henry VIII.
No, he didn't.
It is.
He exploded.
It is.
Is that what really sunk the Spanish Armada? Well,
he exploded, and I think it may have happened in the room where my wedding reception happened. It was one of the stories we got told to help sell the venue to her.
Were they explaining some stains on the wall?
He was like... I tell you what,
don't worry about that.
You know, these prices might seem a little steep to you, but I tell you what, it's not the first meat buffet we've had in this room. Let me take you back. Because Henry VIII's body was left out after he was dead. And all the sweat, all the kind of gases, that were basically the accumulated gases from all his excessive hedonism, of like, you know, years of like hunts and boiled dogs for breakfast and like geese, just like... You know, all the wine and all the hedonism over years and years.
So smoked sparrows stuffed into tiger cubs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All that stuff. And his body kind of swelled up and bloated and then it kind of exploded and bits of it went all over the really rather charming venue. And
I mean, but in the cold light of day, you know that's bollocks. That must be bollocks, right? Or you still buy it?
I think, like a lot of things, there'll be a grain of truth in it. Which might be that Henry VIII did die, for example. That element of the story might be what's true. You know, you take what you want from it.
Was it the room where you got... Because we were at your wedding. Was it the room where you got married or the reception room?
No, it was the reception room, which is...
It was kind of like a basement-y kind of room, wasn't it?
Yeah, a cloistered dining space.
A cloistered Tudor discotheque, right?
Was it your wedding, Henry, where the guy doing the DJ was the most miserable wedding DJ of all time? Was that your wedding?
He was called either John the DJ or Dave the DJ. I think it was John the DJ.
So he'd even given up at the naming stage.
Before he even started
his first gig.
His lack of energy for his work should have rung out loud and clear from his name. From the name of his business. John the DJ. I was thinking of just calling it John, but
you've got to set out your stall, haven't you?
You've got to set out your stall. It's not enough these days just calling yourself John.
I'm not going to get to Ibiza if I just call myself John, am I?
Got to let people know what the product is and get people talking about it. Have you heard about John? No. Have you heard about John the DJ? No. But I've got an idea what he does.
Well, obviously hooked you in, Henry, because you booked him.
I think he's just fallen asleep from his last gig, hadn't he? You just woke him up and there he was. Wait, mate, there's a wedding reception here. I mean, either play some tracks or get out.
He was so lacklustre that I wouldn't even want to use the phrase lacklustre because it has the word lustre in it. I mean, it was absolute... I mean, no, to be honest, John the DJ, he's the reason some people say... God, being a DJ is just easy. Just stick on music. It's because of people like John the DJ, because that is all John does, and not that well.
At my sister's wedding, the DJ beforehand kind of asked, he wanted to know what music they liked. And I think he maybe had been in touch the week before. And they were both very easy. And they were just like, oh, just the normal wedding disco, please. And he was like, no, I really want to play the stuff you like. And they were like, we're not that kind of people, really. We don't really mind. And he went, no, who do you like? And you know when someone asks you, like, what do you like? You go blank and you can't really think of anything. Yeah. So my sister's husband went, oh, I don't know, I quite like Shakira. Then when it came to the wedding, there was this period where he played like six Shakira songs on the bass. Like he really...
Oh, waka, waka, waka. Oh, this time in Africa. Waka, 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 waka.
And now, little surprise for the bride and groom. Shakira, out of the cake now, Shakira. We've got Shakira here.
The other thing was that he
how have you paid for this? We sold your house, but Shakira's here. She's got 5 minutes.
She said she'll do it as long as she gets a free tilt at the buffet. 5 minutes. You're not allowed to disturb her, and she can take as much as she wants. And she's bought her own big oval plate.
And I hope you guys are looking forward to your honeymoon. No, it's not Barbados. Shakira's garden. You're going to spend the dream. You're going to spend 2 weeks in Shakira's garden. Yeah, we sorted it out for you.
You're not allowed in the house.
Not in the house.
Shakira won't be there. She's touring in Japan.
You can't. You can go to the toilet in the shed if you can get in.
Well, number ones, there is a fountain. That's okay for number ones, but yeah.
There is a spa coming soon to the area around the corner. It's not open yet. Sorry.
And also, you can't leave the garden for security purposes.
Can't leave the garden.
And please don't touch the tortoise.
If you touch the tortoise. Shakira will sue you. She's very litigious. We've taken fingerprints already from you from the knife that you cut the cake with. Those will be tested against the tortoise.
Which is covered in anti-climb paint as well.
If you even think about climbing up that tortoise to have a look over the fence to learn about your food options, because Shakira knows how people think, okay, and she knows how her fans think. Yeah. You think, if you dare to climb onto that tortoise, that trying to see if you can look over the fence to see what your food options are, Shakira and a team of lawyers will come down on you very, very hard. Okay?
And I know it's tempting to look over the fence because Peter Gabriel lives next door, but he is also a very litigious and violent man.
And he's got a whole fleet of medieval siege machinery he's had built at considerable expense.
That's what Salisbury Hill is about.
To stop people like you trying to get through his garden to see what the food options in the area are, okay?
He's got a little buzzer rigged up that's connected to the tortoise. As soon as you stand on it, that's going off in his little office room. And then he readies the trebuchets.
Yeah. And frankly, he doesn't do a lot else at the moment. So don't stop thinking he's writing his next album or planning a tour. No, he's mainly...
His finger is hovering looking over that fire button. It is hovering.
And he can't wait. He cannot wait for an excuse
don't
to use that trebuchet.
Give him an excuse.
And the hot oil, the thing that pours the hot oil, all of it. Yeah. A volley of arrows. A volley of arrows. That's what you're going to get. Yeah? So think twice about whether it's worth it to find out if you can get a pasty. Yeah? Get hot pasty in the area. No, a volley of arrows through you. Okay? Cool. So there's a cheese room. And
did you know that Henry VIII exploded over there?
Enjoy your night, guys.
Okay, time to fire up the old beam machine.
Very good.
Old Faithful. Someone got in touch, actually, to say that they thought the beam machine should have a sound effect, like a kind of computer going... Pop, 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 pop. What they don't realise is, of course, if we included the actual sound of the beam machine working, which we cut out every time, just the tearing of flesh.
Yeah, it would be powerfully emetic. It's a bad shout. Yeah.
Screaming. The team of nurses holding me down.
Yeah. I doubt they're asking for that. They've got a sense, I'm sure. They're asking for some nice sanitized, clean.
That's it.
Buck Rogers style.
I think they want a 1970s computer.
Yeah.
Which from a sci-fi, isn't it? Which is up and down.
But what they didn't realize is that the real technology isn't a 1970s computer. It's a 1770s torture rack that's been repurposed into a sort of bingo machine
woven into
within
the flesh of a real man.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the sound it makes, I mean, really
haunting.
It's excruciating. I think that and Mike's bits where he talks about guitars, which we always have to cut out every week, mm-hmm. those two things are both should never be heard by human ears.
It's like, what's that film, Grizzly Man? what's the guy called, the director?
Werner Herzog.
And he goes, yeah. No one should ever hear these tapes. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yes.
And he's got an audio recording of a man getting torn apart by a bear.
He stands in front of the widow, I think, does he not?
And that's right.
Yeah. 2 yards away from her as he absorbs the soundtrack of her husband's death.
He listens to it on a sort of Walkman, basically.
Yeah, in her living room.
Yeah, they're in that category.
No one must ever hear these tapes.
No, but they must ever.
Yeah, so we can agree it probably only Werner Herzog should ever listen to those
yes.
things.
Yeah, yeah.
Only he is built of enough metal that he can handle that audio.
We've actually put together a small compilation of B Machine actuality and Mike talking about guitars. We've sort of mashed them up, and yeah. We'll be sending those to Werner.
With a background of Henry chewing nuts.
Yeah.
Various other health food snacks. And non-health food snacks, of course.
Yeah.
Your Snyders.
My Snyders.
Come on, guys, give them their full name. You can't just call them the Schneiders.
Your Schneiders.
My Schneiders of Hanover. Yeah, they are. They coat the palate in a really thick, oily substance, which gives you a really kind of claggy voice.
But then your cashews slip down all the smoother, don't they?
Then the cashews creates a kind of...
Yeah,
like a slide for the cashews. Yeah. They just tumble down.
No one should eat these Schneiders of Hanover.
Nobody should ever taste this crunchy, oniony, jalapeno option they've made. No one.
I know we're meant to be working out which topic we're about to talk about, but we've had a lot of emails about Schneiders of Hanover, Henry.
Mm, yes.
And a lot of people finding them in a very normal supermarket situation, like a Sainsbury's or a Tesco.
Well, that's because Henry leaves them about, don't you, Henry? Henry goes about, he bulk buys, and then he goes about and he puts them in between bags of around. Muesli and things and by the dishwasher salt.
Yeah, it's part of my contract with Hanover's. It's, just stash them about, little Easter eggs.
It's guerrilla marketing.
But the suggestion being that they're not the kind of niche product that you made them out to be. They're actually just kind of the premier pretzel snack brand in Britain.
What, are you saying that they're absolutely massive?
Yeah.
And I've been talking about them. I've been talking about them as if they're like a really niche thing, and they're actually not. So it'd be like me coming on and going, I've just discovered this wonderful little place called...
Shell Garage,
Shell.
It's called.
Wonderful. Wonderful little, charming little maritime logo they've got.
Because someone had been into a Sainsbury's or a Tesco, and there looked like to be an entire aisle of Schneider's Hanover, like four shelves high of various Schneider's Hanover.
They're actually everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it possible that demand has rocketed since Henry began his marketing campaign on this very podcast?
It could be that they're sick of being niche.
Yeah,
because actually that might explain why they're no longer in my little garage.
They've gone too big.
They've just gone massive, which means I'm checking out. Because frankly, they're not. You know, they're sold out. A little bit mainstream, a little bit vanilla, which is an unspeakably disgusting idea. absolutely hideous. You know what? I tell you one thing I do like about Snyder's is they've got the guts to really add onion in to a flavour. It'll be cheese and ham, and most people would have stopped there. But it'll be cheese and ham and onion. They'll often have onion on a flavour.
But onion sort of doesn't bear mentioning really often.
If it is ever mentioned, it's always the last one. You never see onion up front and centre, do you?
On onion and cheese crisps. Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
It always follows from behind.
Onion and cheese crisps sounds absolutely great. It's true. You never, it's never just like, I'm just going to have the onion, please.
And then I'll have the onion bap, if you don't mind. And I see you do bolognese. Do you do a vegetarian bolognese? Do you do an onion bolognese, please? Just an onion. Ooh. Just an onion bolognese, please.
Just a couple of onions for the table.
But they're the hardworking base vegetable, aren't they, onion?
They're the unsung hero of the vegetable world.
You know that phrase, it's called many layered, it's like an onion.
Yeah.
I feel like I hear that quite a lot. People reach for onion in that situation.
Are you criticising those people?
I just feel like, is that really the only thing we've got that's multi-layered? We have to start talking about onions all the time.
I mean, yeah, what else could it be?
Or it's like a lasagna.
Oh, it's like a poorly treated case of psoriasis.
Do you get layers of psoriasis?
Sure. If you work hard enough.
So you just keep breaking through with the psoriasis. Do you think you've cured it and you break through and there's another layer underneath?
There's a mince and bechamel layer.
We're through to the second bechamel layer, which means at least another four layers of psoriasis before we get down to the tomatoes layer.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. Sure.
Right, time to fire up the beam machine and see what we're going to be talking about this week. Okay, let's have a look. So this week's topic is... It's been sent in by Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say where she's from, so we'll assume...
Bremen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bremen. Yeah, it's the default place.
And this week's topic is purple. Purple.
Ooh, purple.
Mm.
Purple's like, it's kind of a colour that you can't really wear unless you're trying to make a statement. Do you know what I mean?
For example, that you are the queen. It's quite regal. And I mean, I know we always end up here in the end, but to be fair,
you're right. I think it's the queen and prince who can pull it off. Both royal, both people with royal vibes.
Indeed.
Do you want me to talk about this at all?
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
Hey.
What?
Just to paint a picture for the listener, Mike has picked up a guitar. He's showing us across the Zoom link, and it is shiny, and it is purple.
It's purple. Purple mirrored pickguard.
I mean, don't just, say those words. Don't use the term, Mike. We've talked about this.
Your
Ibanez, you can't say
RG
Pickguard
series.
Don't,
is 24
don't
fretter.
Don't use acronyms. Stop it.
Standard setup, really, with the pickups. You've got two double coils and a single coil.
Don't say coil again. Stop it.
Rosewood fingerboard.
Not fingerboard.
What gauge strings are you rocking there, Mike?
these are fine gauge. Hang on, I'll show you the...
Don't encourage him back, please.
Yeah. Enable fine gauge. I think 10, maybe? No, that's more regular, isn't it?
When you talk about guitars like this, you suck joy out of the world because you make music, a beautiful thing, boring. Yeah. Do you understand? Yeah. It's like saying a fairy doesn't exist and then saying fairies don't exist and then fairies die. It's like that.
Yeah, but
the more you talk...
The joy isn't destroyed. The joy goes into me. It's slack sleep, you know. You can't create or destroy joy.
It's a zero-sum game.
Yeah, I just suck it up. Oh. I feel great. I feel better than I felt all day after that. I just slip a bit in there, didn't I? Lovely.
Oh. When you bought your purple guitar, Mike, was that inspired by liking Prince?
Maybe a bit. I was about 15, so I definitely would have been a bit into Prince at that point. I'd have been more into other stuff. But hey, it's not about the look, buddy. No, let me tell you, when you sit down with a guitar, it's how it feels in your hands to the player.
Oh, God. So, Mike.
You're a single organism.
Oh, God. Stop it.
You've now got two necks.
Yeah, you're a parasitical organism that should be stamped out. You've got two necks, one gizzard.
That was the title of my first album.
You've now got five knobs.
Mike, do you remember choosing purple? Did you have options for that guitar and you chose purple? Did it mean something to you, purple?
No, it wasn't. That wasn't, genuinely wasn't the thing. There was this guitar shop in Southampton, it was. Would have been about 15 when I got this. I've had this for a long time.
Yeah, okay.
I must have tried every guitar in the shop that was within kind of affordable range.
It's quite a weird thing, isn't it, Mike? I know that Henry hasn't had this experience, but the kind of 14, 15-year-old boy hanging around in a guitar shop thing.
Is that weird?
Well, it's just like a very singular experience, I think. Like, you don't get kind of people hanging around in other sort of shops in quite the same way, do you? You wouldn't hang around in a sort of kitchen supply shop.
Is it like a butcher's dog? Is there always one there?
Oh, yeah.
I would spend hours just sort of looking at guitars and just sort of hanging around in there.
But hang on. Okay. So to me... But
have I lured you into talking about Guitar Trap? I feel quite good about this.
I think you sort of have, in a way.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of a honey trap. I'm so disgusted that I've been drawn into it against my better nature. Okay. To try and understand the poison that seeps from your mouth on this godforsaken topic. Now, so, like, you know, like the Gallaghers, like basically the Gallaghers.
The Gallaghers.
Yeah.
Would they have been 15-year-old boys hanging around in guitar shops once? Because I don't think they would have done. You see, I think there's two streams in music. There's the people that actually play guitars in bands who are quite cool, and then there's these ultra dweebs like Mike, who from the age of from the age of 15 was essentially already a middle-aged man. Let's not beat around the bush. Mike would have been deep into his middle ages.
Yeah,
into his middle age.
That's why. Yeah, this is my time now. I feel I'm finally there.
You've caught up with
exactly.
But is that a separate community to the kind of people that are actually in bands?
I think there's two different. I think Noel probably would have in his young years hung about a bit, because Noel isn't famed as one of the great guitarists of all time.
No, and that's no doubt a list that you like to bore the shit out of people with at weddings. I imagine. Is that next year? Well, actually. For me, and what you'll have, Mike, won't you? You'll have an interesting and massive titanium inverted commas. Interesting one in your top five, weren't you? Actually, someone called
Stuart Nosh from the Noshmeisters.
Stuart Nosh from the Noshmeisters, actually.
Worse or better than you people say he is.
That album, Dark Nosh, he breaks new ground.
Yeah, and it was so fantastic. The mention of Free Trade Hall, because actually just before the Sex Pistols came on, what happened was Michael Nosh, who was the head of the Noshmeisters, he would wear a toilet on his head, which was so funny and interesting at the time. And we all got loads of little small round badges and wore them. Yeah, it was brilliant. But
Yeah, one of them.
I think you've strayed there into people who are actually more boring than guitar enthusiasts, who are like sort of music journalists, who are the most boring people on earth, I think.
You're talking about people who are utterly obsessed with the Manchester Free Trade Hall and the Hacienda.
Yes, yeah. I mean, to be fair, actually, a lot of them I do like their work. There's just something about it that's a bit...
Yeah.
They're quite obsessed, aren't they?
There's a lot of people who can't let the Hacienda go.
I mean, it was just a nightclub. Like, you know, a nightclub is, you know, occasionally on the weekend you go, oh, we could, it's Friday night or Saturday night, we could go to the nightclub. That's it. That's what a nightclub is. You go to the nightclub, have a night out, next day.
No, Henry, it's the crucible of a culture, a counterculture, which would come to... Which would come to define a whole generation, and that later turned into the election of Tony Blair.
Have you? but have you seen the photos of the Hacienda on the inside? It's just a nightclub with big speakers, like a bar, the toilets. It's just it's a nightclub. They're literally in every town in the country has about four of them.
You don't understand, man. You don't understand what was going on.
There would be the odd armed gangster in there, I think, as well, for a bit of colour.
Yeah.
We don't have that in Exeter. I think my understanding, I'm not really necessarily plugged into the Exeter night scene. But my understanding...
I guarantee, Mike, there's never been a nightclub in Exeter which has defined the generation. I don't think...
I think there is a nightclub in Exeter. I'll be forgiven for being wrong about this, I'm sure. It's basically this timepiece, as far as I know. I mean, that's...
It's called Timepiece.
It's called Timepiece. Basically, all roads lead to Timepiece. I think if you're on a big old bender in Exeter, eventually...
So is it genuinely called Timepiece?
It's genuinely called Timepiece.
that's the most twee name for a club I've ever heard in my life.
If you're on a huge bender in Exeter and you've lost a member of your group, you know where to find them, because they will end up in Timepiece.
Timepiece?
Yeah.
It feels like the average age would be like 63. Timepiece. It just sounds so twee.
Well, a lot of people retire down here, sure.
But Henry, you're someone who, you know, grew up in London, which is full of kind of, you know, world...
Oh, down the ministry. Yeah. Oh, Henry down the ministry, was it?
World-beating.
Back in the day.
World-beating sounds.
Always down the ministry, weren't you?
Ministry of Sound.
Fabric.
Mm. Fabric. Denim.
Mm-hmm. Febreze.
Merino.
Yeah.
Fleece.
Espadrille.
There was a lot of corduroy. I was around the scene.
But the reason I mentioned that, Henry, is that I don't think you fully understand the provincial nightclub. The provincial nightclub vibe is a very special vibe, I think.
It's heady. Also, the DJ, it's got something akin to a kind of student disco, where the DJ will absolutely know the tracks that will be compulsory dance tracks on the floor. You could be the most serious gangs might be out and about on a big old night out. You put Reach for the Stars, S Club 7 on, they're a boogie, you know, Uptown Funk, whatever it might be, you know.
Yeah.
Backstreet's back.
So basically, clubbing is a hellish phase. Yeah. In one's life, as you've just reminded me by really awful, fucking awful song. Clubbing is just—it's a horrible experience you have to go through when you're young. Generally speaking, it's very, very noisy. You've lost some people, or you're lost.
Usually dancing on quite a lot of crunching broken glass.
There's broken glass.
Places I used to go. Yeah.
Something menacing happens in the toilet.
Yeah.
You lose all your money. You're sick.
Your clothes stink for 3 days.
And that's what going to a club is.
It's a rite of passage.
It's a rite of passage. But that's what the Hacienda then would... Well, how is that different? A night in the Hacienda is, you try and get in. One of your mates can't get in because he's too drunk. You do get in. You lose everyone. Something menacing happens in the toilet.
Yeah. But the difference is, Henry, the person who pukes on your shoes is Peter Hook from New Order. That's...
Yeah,
okay. That's the key difference. So, whereas in Exeter, the person who pukes in your shoes is a local lollipop lady, or Mike.
Yeah, me out on a night out with a local lollipop lady. Yeah, having a ruddy great time.
And she just stashes her lollipop
in the cloakroom. It's probably
in the cloakroom on the way in.
An extra quid maybe for the lollipop.
And on the way out, I've seen her on the way home at 3 a.m. She'll have a cheap pizza, but she'll have it stuck. She'll be carrying it at the end of the lollipop, pretending to be an Italian chef. I've seen that. Purple is very much the colour of dairy milk, isn't it? I'm quite interested in the way that brands try and sort of control a colour. The sweet spot, the dream for an advertiser is when you see purple or think purple, you just want to buy Dairy Milk. It becomes like an instant subliminal thing. Right. So Dairy Milk sales will probably go up during this podcast. In fact, if you're listening to this, you're probably eating some Dairy Milk right now. I know I am. It'll just happen.
For those living outside the UK, Dairy Milk is probably the UK's most popular chocolate. If you're listening in America, you'll probably...
Is that the Hershey's?
You'll probably be eating Hershey's or some other absolutely shit chocolate because you guys don't realise. You're the world's superpower. You have a military that could crush any country in seconds. You are the world's most prosperous country. You are in charge in terms of world culture is still, I would say, overwhelmingly American if you had to take the temperature of the whole world.
Yeah.
English is the lingua franca of the universe because of America. <The universe. laughs> But your chocolate is so bad.
Yeah.
And you don't, I think you might not realize, because if you realized, you would revolt.
Unless that's the wrong, unless that's the wrong way around. And the reason they've been so successful culturally and militarily and in many other ways is because they haven't been focusing on chocolate so much.
Oh, I see.
Whereas everyone else has been pouring all their work and effort and time and thinking into a
good point.
A lovely little
so jockey. The reason that the Swiss aren't the world power is because they were spending too much time perfecting, which they have done, Milka chocolate, which is perfection in chocolate.
Exactly. The French were putting bits of chocolate into pastries for years.
Yes.
Everyone's been distracted.
Belgian chocolate's very good.
Famously so.
They're not military big hitters.
The Spanish are dipping churros into chocolate.
They are, aren't they? When,
lovely.
When they could be instead lovely. Making their own nuclear capacity.
And the Midlands here chugs out Cadbury's Dairy Milks, doesn't it? Tons and tons per day.
When they could be making uranium-tipped bullets.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on Dairy Milk versus Galaxy? I'd say those are the two big hitters.
Dairy Milk every time for me.
I go for Dairy Milk over Galaxy, but to me Galaxy feels too sort of
it's quite creamy.
Indulgent. It's something about the branding.
Mm.
It feels too it's for the night. It's sensual. It's whereas Dairy Milk is
too luxurious.
Yeah, Dairy Milk is like it's legitimate. It's a daytime snack. It's not too hedonistic. You know, as Galaxy is like sensual. It's like romance, love.
It's indecent in some way. You wouldn't it's want indecent. Your mum knowing about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel like when you're eating Galaxy, you ought to be wearing like a sort of silk kimono.
Yeah, but in a bath.
In a bath. But you've
a freestanding bath.
Roll top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roll top and roll bottom.
Yes, and cupping a little rabbit in your arms.
Cupping it?
Cupping it.
It's a consenting rabbit.
As a consenting rabbit, you're cupping it and you're just kissing it on its little pink nose.
I don't like this vision at all.
Yeah, that's taken a turn for me.
No, I'm getting mixed up with the Cadbury's Caramel Rabbit.
The advertising slogan, of course, was, why have cotton when you can have silk?
Well, I've got loads of cotton, though. I'm very happy with it.
But imagine all of the cotton things you own, Henry, replaced with a silken version.
You'd be slipping all over the place. You'd be slipping and sliding. You'd be slipping out of your own pants.
It's a horrible idea.
It's what I imagine happens in Miami. I've never been to Miami, so this is based on nothing, but I assume everyone there is always wearing silk.
It's quite weird when you think about where silk comes from.
Mm.
Because it's a fabric, but it's made out of the arse of a worm?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird, isn't it?
It's not, yeah. I can get past that, but I think that what I struggle with is how did this first come about? Who made the first silk waistcoat? You know, what was happening? What inspired someone when they saw that worm with some weird stringy stuff coming out of the back of its ass? Thought, do you know what? If I can get 8,000 of these and harvest what they're churning out of their assholes, I might, just might.
I could make a metaphor for a mid-range chocolate that's trying to appeal to a mass market audience.
Who's got the time to be doing that in the first place? You know, particularly in days of yore.
It's so weird. And also, silk is a luxury item. Silk, you know, it's almost literally the opposite of a worm's arse, isn't it? Silk. Like, it's so strange, that juxtaposition. It's unthinkable. It's one of those things that we must not think of it.
you know what I mean?
It's like a pearl comes out of an oyster. Like an oyster's absolutely gross.
Yeah.
But it creates this little ball of luxury.
A lot of luxury things come from gross stuff, potentially. Well, two.
Lobsters.
Where do they come from?
Well, they are themselves. The lobster meat is within the grossest packaging.
They come from other lobsters. That's disgusting. Yes, lobsters are the most delicate and refined, you know, meat there
animal
is.
Animal to
is,
boil is to death and smash
the
to
lobster's thigh. Yeah. And that comes from the most hideous, gross sort of alien creature, slimy, tentacly, absolutely grim. Yeah. Clippers, claws, clompers. You know, it's got all the different...
Sweet clompers.
The meat from the clompers is particularly prized, isn't it?
So prized.
Tonight, darling, you may have the clomper meat.
It's delicious and a powerful aphrodisiac, of course.
It really is.
I mean, again, we've strayed very far from the topic. I think we're
learning through doing this podcast. We're learning that we tend, whatever happens, to lurch towards the royal family or to crustaceans. And we've done
and coincidence.
Whatever the topic is, that will happen. That has happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's okay.
So actually, the king prawn would be our ideal topic.
Yeah.
But silks became, because silk, like when silk was sort of discovered or by Europeans.
It was Chinese, right? Originally, I think.
Yeah. But then, I think so. But then it became this huge thing, like the Silk The Silk Road.
Go on. This is fascinating, Henry. So I'm very knowledgeable, very knowledgeable on this subject.
So the Silk Road was a huge road
made of silk, of course.
made of silk.
That's right.
It was a lovely smooth drive.
Very tricky upkeep.
Massively expensive to maintain, and sometimes there'd be roadworks, and there'd just be a load of worms shitting out new bits of road,
shitting out a diversion. Got to go via Thornbury now. It's going to take bloody hours.
Yeah. But the silk was this like luxury item, which became this huge, like, changed the whole sort of global like politics and stuff with probably. And then, but it's just because like the Europeans like we must have silks.
Silks.
Oh, the other one was
silks and spices from the East.
Spices was the other one, right? Both of those things, you know, if you said to me now, Henry, you can never use silk again.
And you can never use a clove.
You'd start a bloody war, mate. You say that now, you're all talk. You'd be constructing an armada. You'd be creating new firearms. You'd be waging war. You'd levy a tax on the people. There'd be conscription. Wave upon wave of young men would be killed. Also, you can get your bloody clove.
So I can have my silky nutmeg Thursday. A bunch of consenting adults dress up in silk, and there's one nutmeg in the middle. We all bring a little nutmeg shaver, and we toss the nutmeg around. We shave little bits off, and you know, it's a really lovely consensual night. What I'm saying is, okay, if I had to live without silk, I'd be absolutely fine with that. Mm-hmm. If I had to live without spices, I'd be a bit pissed off. But if the alternative was traveling essentially by a mixture of foot and crap old boats all the way to China, I'd be like, it's fine, I can use garlic, I can use onions, I can use a lot of butter. I'll be using a lot of butter in my cooking.
Yeah. A bit of rosemary. I can manage a bit of rosemary, can't you, in the back garden?
Rosemary and thyme.
Yeah.
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 In fact, I'll get into it. It'd be nice to get in a way get back into the traditional.
It's a sausagey future, isn't it? It's a sausagey, hearty future.
Salt and pepper, I believe, are native, is that right?
No. Well, pepper isn't.
Are you telling me I can't have pepper?
No, you can't have pepper. It's from, not from Britain.
Right. I'm hiring a canoe. I'll see you in Beijing. No. But it's amazing, like, the extent to which people were so up for, like, spices and silks that they would decide to, you know, thousands of people had died and everything, and the whole sort of shape of global politics is probably affected by it and so on. I'm not taking any questions. That's the end of the lecture. Goodbye.
So that was Purple.
What's in the mailbag?
Okay, mailbag. Good mailbag this week. This one is very, very gratifying. I really like this one. This is from
Susan.
She says, "Dear Mike, Ben and Henry, on the theme of bringing people together, 2 months ago I was at the Crown Court waiting for a case to be called."
Ooh, strong start.
"I was sat headphones in, laughing at a new podcast called Three Bean Salad."
Whatever could she be referring to?
Well, we've established there's more than one, so let's not,
it could be the other one.
Let's not drill down into that too much.
No, good point. A colleague in the profession, I assume she's a lawyer rather than
on trial,
criminal profession.
Anyway, guys, I'll be out in 35 years. And if you're still going, I'd love to know.
A colleague in the profession, bracket, someone I had never met before, came over and asked what I was listening to. After explaining the format, I hope, in detail.
I wouldn't mind having that explanation sent over to us, especially with the cool, steady eye of a lawyer on it. Because it occurred to me the other day that I've got no idea what the format is.
After explaining the format and offering a small apology for Henry's penchant for oversharing, he was in. He took a socially distant seat, unpacked his headphones, and chuckled through the inaugural episode posters. 90 minutes later, we were called into the same courtroom. Him prosecuting, me defending.
Wow.
Wow.
So they locked horns in the...
in the hallowed space. Crown Court. Where mankind's greatest achievement is put to the test once more.
I was hoping that what was going to happen then is like things that came up in the podcast were then used as both a defence and a line of prosecution. That's not what happens in the message. That would be great.
So that never features in the legal dramas you watch, that before a case is like a 90-minute podcast listening. Yeah. Before they start, you just sit around for 90 minutes.
So 90 minutes later, we were called into the same courtroom, him prosecuting, me defending. The judge was probably wondering why we were both so bloody cheerful. When the trial concluded 2 weeks later, he asked me out.
What?
And we have been courting ever since.
Golly gosh. A bean romance.
So we've created a bean's romance.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to know what the case was about and potentially how really grim it was.
The more harrowing, the better. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Also, if I was being represented and my life was on the... basically, my future was on the line, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's finally happened, the thing we all have a nightmare about, which is...
you've been pinched for a series of arsons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that thing we all have a nightmare about, which is that, you know, like five houses have burnt down on your road and you're covered in diesel.
Yeah.
And
just because...
you're laughing your ass off for some reason. And the police turn up.
And they come around and you're in the middle of a silk and nutmeg party. So they think you're some kind of pervert from the off.
Yeah, you're at the diesel phase of the silk and nutmeg party. Yeah. Because the diesel gives your silk a lovely, lovely sheen.
Somehow, during the night's revelry, you've actually literally had a packet of Swan matches tattooed onto your face. So you've got the Swan matches logo on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and just everything's adding up to you did it. That's that horrible nightmare, yeah? Which is, and no one believes you.
Yeah.
All you've got is one hotshot lawyer. You find out that she's flirting with the opposition. And then not only that, instead of preparing for the case, bearing in mind you're going to go down for 35 years, you're not built for prison, yeah?
Yeah, you won't last 5 minutes.
You have got a facial tattoo, though, in this scenario.
You have got a facial tattoo. That's the only hope you've got is to fall in with the Swan Matches gang.
Yeah, you're going to be dead. They're going to carve you up and use you to put their lunch trays at the end of a meal. Yeah.
Exactly. You will be a prison lunch tray rack if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah? And then your lawyer, instead of preparing for the case, is listening to three, you know, what, tossers?
Essentially.
Talking about posters. just before going up. And then not only is she not prepared, she's flirting with the guy from... you know, it's just absolute nightmare. I'd like to know what the case was, with how grim, if it was grim, and B, who won?
And also, would she, in return, because we've obviously done something for her here, we've potentially kindled a romance which might last the rest of her life, not putting any pressure on her, but could happen. In return for that, could she maybe be our lawyer for free?
Ah,
yeah.
When the inevitable happens.
Well, we've already got the legal battle with the other three Bean Salad podcast.
We've got multiple potential litigations in the pipeline, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've got Snyder's, Dairy Milk, Phil Collins.
Russell Crowe's a big one.
The crustacean lobby.
I don't imagine Russell Crowe's going to go through legal.
What he believes in, what he calls crow justice. Where...
it's the verdict of the beak.
So what happens with crow justice is it involves him basically gaining access to the adjoining properties around your house or flat. Yeah.
Over a 3-mile radius.
filling them with crows.
Filling them with crows. So it takes him a while because he has to buy up the property.
Well, it's also getting the residential parking places as well. That's the thing that really slows him down.
That slows him down. Also, things like it's difficult buying up school, government properties, council properties.
Municipal leisure centres.
But as he says, as he always says, there ain't enough red tape in the world to stop crow justice. Every house, 3-mile radius full of crows. You wake up. Nothing seems odd initially, except there's a bit more cawing.
A bit more pecking.
There's slightly more ambient cawing and pecking than you used to at breakfast. But you just think nothing of it. You just think, it's probably just probably something to do with mating patterns or maybe something to do with global warming.
Humidity or something like that,
The humidity levels have changed. There's more crows. Probably just more crows in the air at the moment. It's not going to knock you off your schedule.
And for your breakfast, someone's left a hot panini on your breakfast bar.
Yeah.
But you think, maybe it's just a gift from an admirer I don't know about.
Yeah, two slightly strange things today. One is this higher than usual ambient crow noises and a fresh panini on my plate. But I'll just... put me off my stride, is it? And then you open your cutlery drawer, don't you?
Yeah.
To get your knife and fork out.
And who's in there? But Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
Face up.
He's face up. He's adapted your kitchen units, so there's room for him. He comes up wearing your cutlery drawer like a sort of crown. And at that point, he basically just gives you a harsh dressing down. It lasts about a quarter of an hour. He then ends it by going, "I'm harsh, but I'm fair." Puts a check on the table, which is for the money to reassemble your cutlery drawer. Changes with inflation, but I think it's about 115 quid. Normally, then you go about your business. You head off to work. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't notice that all those crows. Sometimes people get straight on a bus, whatever. They never notice all the crows that. So he spends a lot of money on the getting the crows to move into all those homes, and it's not clear exactly why he does that.
I also wonder whether we should disguise
Susan.
His name. I don't know if she'd get in trouble for talking about her court job. I'm wondering whether she thought it would be anonymous when we... Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be responsible for a barrister losing their job. That's
let's go back and then just beep out the name or something.
Can we replace it with the name Susan?
If you say a woman's name, I'll put that
Take it away. So have a nice clear.
So just any woman's name
any
off the top of my head
that you can possibly think of.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what you're going to go for.
Okay,
3, 2, 1.
Susan.
Great. All right, next one. Amelia says, "I actually think it's very easy to tell your voices apart." Thank you, Amelia.
Very good.
The problem is, I wouldn't be able to put a name to those voices if you put a gun to my head. Mm. This is where it gets weird. Except for maybe Wozniak, because his voice reminds me of two people. Firstly, the man I encountered at 6 years old when happily waddling down a coastal path whose dog was off a lead and subsequently trampled me to the ground. So that's the first guy that you remind her of.
Okay.
And the second is her earliest and most vivid memory, which is an actor dressed as a clown who blocked me in a maze as a child from getting to my dad and sister at a Halloween event, who taunted and mocked me while I cried and tried to get past his legs, which were covered in fake blood.
Oh, my God. He's two of the most demonic, predatory individuals I think I've ever heard about in my life. What am I doing? How am I giving that off? Shit. I'm really horrified.
I thought the second one was going to be a kind of antidote to the first one. So on the one hand, quite a sinister memory. But just on the other hand, a really, really terrifying, probably even more disturbing.
Genuinely damaging
memory.
Oh, wow. Oh, sorry, Amelia.
Next email is about our old friend, the Flightless Bird Zone.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
No, please, not my face!
It's becoming a bit of a tradition now that we talk about a flightless bird that turns out not to be flightless. Tim says, imagine my fury on hearing your listener John's contribution to the topic of flightless birds, where he sought to impose upon us his anecdotes relating to a quail. The quail is, of course, more than capable of flight, being a migratory species. How your listener thinks it travels from Africa to its breeding grounds in the east of England is anyone's guess.
There's loads of ways of doing that now. Come on. Planes, trains and automobiles.
And finally, Mel, last week, you'll remember, Henry, you asked the listeners whether they had ever had a situation where their pet had slightly taken over and become the sort of dominant force in their household.
Yes.
And we've had a couple of those. Jack says, when I was a kid, my brother got a baby iguana from the boardwalk.
Under the boardwalk, we'll be falling in love and on the boardwalk.
I bought an iguana from a guy.
A guy who sells iguana on the boardwalk.
So I assume Jack's maybe from the USA. We don't really have... That feels very American experience to me, going to the boardwalk and buying an iguana. It doesn't feel very British to me.
It also sounds like the kind of thing that if you're a British schoolboy or girl about the age of 12 writing a musical set in America, but you'd never been to America, you might have a character say, coming into a scene... And to try and create what you think is a normal American atmosphere as a 12-year-old Brit, you've got to give them a line. And the line they end up saying is, hey, Jack, hey, where you been? Hey, yeah, I just came back down from the boardwalk where I got myself this iguana.
I've been stooping on the boardwalk and I came down the sidewalk and I had a cotton candy sneakers all the way to the 4th of July.
Got a meat pretzel.
With a soda. Hey, Frankie, how do you spell colour? I can't remember again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sure. So when I was a kid, my brother got a baby iguana from the boardwalk. It lived on a sort of wooden rack in the bathroom. Somehow it knew to poop in the bathtub or sink. Mm. Pretty good. As it matured, it became singular.
Hang on. Neither of those are the correct place to poop. That's such an American positive attitude to take. That's pooing in the two places you mustn't poop in a bathroom.
Yeah, I just waved that through because of the way he'd written it. Like, yeah, great.
It's maybe a step up from down the shaving mirror, I'd say.
It's slightly better than down the shaving mirror and onto the soap, but still.
Yes. As it matured, it became singularly attached to my mom. Mom?
There we go. That's the clincher.
Yep.
It adopted a threatening posture with the rest of us, bobbing its head up and down. For about the last year of its life, everyone except my mum just used the other bathroom. So it took over the bathroom, essentially.
I'm not surprised with all that poop in the bath and sink that people stopped using it.
Then, Jack writes, she decided to put it down. I don't remember her rationale exactly. It may have started climbing her and biting her. Jack.
Crumbs. Wow, that really took a turn at the end, that story.
So that's it from us today. And actually, we're going to have a little hiatus.
It's the end of season one.
Season one of The Beans is over.
It's the end of season two. Now, and it's the end of season one. So with season two, we were thinking of doing like The Wire, and it's all going to have a kind of shipping feel.
Does that mean we're going to recast the whole thing?
Yeah. So we'll be recasting all three Beans. Yeah. And it'll be set, the whole thing will be recorded from a large industrial sort of seaport from inside. We're trying to get an industrial container to do it from inside an industrial container if possible. So it'll have a nice different kind of ambience.
We'll keep a couple of peripheral characters. Bluebell will probably still be in it, for example.
Bluebell will still feature. Yeah. Pam will get referenced. Yeah. There'll still be a Pompidou section. Yeah.
But Mike will be Paul Giamatti.
That's right.
Mike will be Paul Giamatti.
Ben will be played by Tilda Swinton.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Henry will be portrayed by?
Sir Ben Kingsley.
Okay. And Sir Ben Kingsley is absolutely chomping at the bit. He said he just was dying for an opportunity like this. So he's very much first name on the team sheet. He's signed up.
I think he's commandeered the majority of the budget as well, from what I'm hearing. So
yeah,
Swinton's basically doing it for free, I think.
Yeah.
And Giamatti's just happy to be involved.
Yeah, so look out for that. It'll be a few weeks
away.
So yeah,
how long are we going to be off? This is a big Pompidou.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. The Pompidou section is named after the Pompidou Centre, which is a tourist attraction in central Paris. The Pompidou Centre has transparent tubes, which means you can see wires and elements of the working of the building. And that's why we've named this section after the Pompidou Centre, because this is a section where we analyse the show itself and therefore look at the metaphorical wires and the merits of metaphorical air conditioning systems within the metaphorical tubes of the podcast.
This is a big Pompidou. I suspect it's going to be more than a couple of weeks, probably around a few weeks. It might be several weeks. It's unlikely to be more.
That's crystal clear, yeah. Mike.
How does that sound?
Yeah.
Put it this way, we're not going to darken July.
No.
With our nonsense, I don't think.
Well,
we don't know.
What's the date today?
It's kind of the end of June, isn't it?
Yeah. We don't know.
We just don't know.
We don't know. Don't worry about it too much, but we'll be back
soon.
But
we're coming back.
We'll be coming back. We'll let you know.
For sure.
And in the meantime,
yeah, we'll be back very soon.
Thank you very much for listening.
Yes, I've enjoyed Series 1, I have to say.
It's been brilliant. It immensely. It's been great fun.
So that's the thing. Maybe that's the thing we should point out. We are taking a brief break, but we are coming back because we've really enjoyed doing it. And thank you very much for all your correspondence and support and listens and whatnot. And there's been word spreading afoot that's become apparent to us, for which we're very grateful. So ta one and all.
If you have thoughts and things you want us to discuss, do still email them in and they'll just
we're still filling
be
the hat
ready,
up.
Waiting for us.
Yeah.
3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Until next time.
Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.
Bye.